episode 68 of Fight Club. This is Eileen.
This is Shannon.
And this is Josh.
And we are back. We took a week hiatus. We weren't supposed to. And then the assignment for last week, since the Vampire Diaries was down for a week, was to watch the 1985 classic Fright Night. And I failed. Josh failed. And then it got busy. And then I was, whatever. Shannon was the only one who did watch it. And now, this is the second, you know, I had another week, another chance to catch up. I still failed. So
double F.
I know, Josh. I really do get an F for the week. But and Shannon gets an A. She watched it all. She did all her homework. She did everything.
Yeah. I watched that movie all the way through.
And I finally watched it this week.
Yes. Good.
It's but tardy. I turned it in late.
You didn't watch the Scream Awards.
No, I did miss that.
You get a C, but I totally get an F. So today we'll be talking about the Vampire Diaries episode 6 and recap plan B. And we got a few more pieces of news as well. But first things first, this is Bike Club Show, where each week we sink our teeth into your favorite fantastic shows. And our website is bikeclubshow.com. You can email us bikeclubshow@gmail.com. And you can also find us on Twitter at Bike Club Show. So sorry we're down for a week. We got a little busy. And I have to admit, I've been a little slow to catch up on the news of our universe. But I think we got a few good things to talk about. As to what's happening in Twilight, True Blood, and of course, The Vampire Diaries. But as we start every week, we start with our wine selection of the week. And I do have something here. So I have something to contribute. I have wine.
Ooh, what is
it? Does anybody else have wine? Does anybody else?
No wine.
I'm drinking my good old Leinenkugel again. I'm a beer girl.
You are. Okay. This is called Steelhead from the Kiviera Vineyards in Sonoma, Dry Creek Valley. It's a 2007 Zinfandel. I will read the back. Steelhead expresses Kiviera's passion for two Dry Creek Valley traditions, making world-class Zinfandel and wise stewardship of the land. This wine honors our commitment and reports to restore the steelhead and coho salmon habitat in Wine Creek on our estate. We are an official sponsor of the trout. Okay, this is not really describing the wine. our Zinfandel, here we go, displays earthy aromas of spice and black fruit accompanied by luscious flavors of cherry, plum, and cocoa. Tom and I are drinking this, and we're almost done with the bottle. He actually gives it 4.5 fangs, which is very generous. Wow. I'm only going to give it 4. It is good, and I got this at Trader Joe's. I think it was about $6 or $7.99. It does have all of those flavors that it's describing, and we actually had this with pasta tonight, so maybe that helped, you know, with a marinara sauce. The Zin is, it's really, really good. I have to say, I'm very surprised. I once again picked it up because of the label, the way it looks. There's like a little fish. It's supposed to be for the trout, you know? But it's kind of like just a splash of paint. It's not, you can tell it's a fish, but it's not like, you don't see scale. You don't see whatever. It's kind of an abstract art. You'll see. It's really good. Steelheadwine.com is their website. And I really do recommend it. I give it 4 fangs.
I have to remember it.
Yeah. Steelhead. Did I say wine? I'm writing it down. Wine.com. And I guess that's our alcohol of the week. And you've already talked about your beverage of choice. Correct? In a past episode, Shannon?
Yes. My Leinenkugel Oktoberfest. Yes. It's the same one as a past episode.
Hey, you know what? If that's your favorite, that's your favorite. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yum.
Hey, when Walmart actually has it in stock, I buy it.
And you told everybody to get it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, why don't we go ahead and, missing today is Stephanie. She had another wedding yet again. And also missing is Lynn, who we knew was going to be out for a while. And I think the last tweet I saw, she's going to Anchor Wat. So, back. She's going to be back November 1st. She might want to take a week to get caught up on everything because it's what, 6 episodes or no? Yeah, 6 episodes, right? Mm-hmm. No, 5. She was there for the premiere.
Oh, yeah, I think it's okay, 5. Right.
Yeah, but she missed everything else. So she's going to, you know, she's going to need to catch up. But she should be back very soon. So, okay, well, let's go ahead and get into the news. Okay, week after week, I keep talking about the Scream Awards. The awards are over. They're done.
Finally.
Did anybody watch them? I missed it.
No, I don't have a DVR, so it's so hard for me to catch stuff on cable.
Yeah. So it's come and gone. And I guess we should just talk a little bit about who won. I did see some pictures. Kristen Stewart was there to attend the event, and she won Best Fantasy Actress. I don't think Robert Pattinson was there, but he won Best Fantasy Actor. Anna Paquin, our favorite Sookie Stackhouse, won Best Horror Actress for True Blood. And Alexander Skarsgård, the luscious Eric, won Best Horror Actor for True Blood.
Lynn would be happy.
Well, yes, she will be very happy with that. Now, Best Fantasy Movie. The Twilight Saga Eclipse. I'm only going to read the stuff that's interesting for us here by club. There's many other movies which I think are really good, and they won different categories. Best TV Show, True Blood, won that. What else? Everything else was like Zombieland.
Oh, it was the holy beep scene of the year, Twisted Sex and True Blood.
I can't believe that one. Yeah.
I voted for that one.
Did you really? Yeah, I think
the
I did too.
The twist.
Yeah, the twist.
I was like, yeah, that caught me off guard.
And then, everything else was Zombieland, Avatar, Inception.
Inception got a few, too.
Yeah, which I'm really glad about. I really like that. Yeah. I really like that film. Yeah. I think it's maybe it's my favorite of the year so far.
I think so for me, too, though I haven't seen a whole lot. But yeah, definitely my favorite.
So that was the Scream Awards. I suspect that they're going to rerun this another time if you missed it or have it online. There are a lot of clips online that you could watch, you know, acceptance speeches, things like that. So if you missed it, check it out. And go to spike.com/blog/scream-2010. So, all right, moving on. Now, Shannon, you last time we talked, you got to watch Let Me In, and I challenged you, and I said, "All right, well, now you got to watch the Swedish version, and I want to know, you know, what you think of it when you do that." And you actually watched Let the Right One In. So, what I'd love to get your thoughts since you saw the American version first. You know, comparing what you think. I mean, you've heard us talk about it a bit, so let us know what you think.
You know, I'm really glad that I was able to see the American version first because I was able to get a feel of the characters and I didn't have to read the subtitles and I was just able to, you know, kind of sit down and watch it, enjoy it for what it was worth. But the Swedish version, I absolutely loved it. I liked it so much better than the American version.
That's interesting that you still loved it more. But you thought watching the American version gave you more insight. Interesting.
Yeah. I feel like it gave me more insight. I felt like when I watched the Swedish version, I was able to understand the characters a lot more and get an idea of what they were feeling so much better. Like, when I first watched the American version, I didn't really pick up that Oscar really wanted to cause pain to all those little bullies that were picking on him at school. But when I watched the Swedish version, and the girl actually came out and said, hit them and cause pain to them, and then at the end I think she actually like came out and argued with him, and she was like, you always wanted to cause pain. The first time I met you, you were saying, you know, I want to slice you like a pig or something like that. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot more like fighting in mm-hmm. the Swedish version. Mm-hmm. And I even liked the very last scene where he was in the pool and the boy was being held down, and you kind of see that. Well, I don't know if I should give it away. Should I give away a spoiler?
Spoiler alerts.
Where you see the hand float away and the head.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was so much more memorable than the American version, where you just see a couple of things in the background, but it's focused on his face the whole time, so you don't really get what's going on. But in the Swedish version, there's, like, all this blood and gore, and you're like, oh, my God, that's so cool.
Now, you, what do you think? Go ahead.
Even the attacks, when the girl was like attacking people, the Swedish version made it look like she was actually jumping on people and, you know, biting their heads off. And in the American one, it was just kind of like, yeah, that's computerized. It's obvious, but, you know, I'll go along with it.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah, because I still haven't seen the American version, but so it didn't feel as real in the American
one. Yeah, the American version, the American ones didn't feel as real because you could tell it was computerized characters and whatnot. But the Swedish one, it looked a lot better as far as their effects whenever she was attacking, climbing on the side of the hospital, stuff like that.
That's interesting because they probably had a much smaller budget, but because of that,
I thought, too.
Well, they probably actually had to do things the old-fashioned way and have the actors actually there instead of, you know, trusting to have CGI cleanup afterwards.
Sometimes,
so that probably worked.
They have the actors there. Yeah, it works so much better.
Overall,
I liked it.
Yeah.
Did you think it was interesting, like, the pacing? Well, Josh, is that, do you hear that popping? Oh, okay. What did you think of the pacing? Because it was a lot different in the Swedish version.
The Swedish version was a lot slower than the American version. Yeah, that was really obvious to me when I was watching it. But I didn't mind it that much because I was really drawn into the characters.
Yeah. Did you like the way they presented it a little bit more versus... The first thing you see at the American film is the guy falling out of the hospital, which you don't see that until way later in the Swedish film. I mean,
that's true.
It's sort of like I felt like, okay, immediately they wanted to just kind of grab you with a shocking event. Whereas the original film, it was such a slow crescendo. It's just a quiet film. And then it built up, and then it built up, and then I remember her first bite didn't come in for a half hour or whatever.
For a really long time.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised that they kind of hid the fact that she was a vampire for such a long time.
Right. And then it just got, it escalated, because we found out who she was, the events of the movie just sort of, built and built and built and built till we get to the, scene in the pool. Whereas, here at the American version, we started right off at the top with something shocking, which I was like, okay, do we really need to do that? But I guess, I don't know, American audiences would rather get caught, seeing something crazy at the beginning.
I preferred seeing the crescendo effect of the Swedish version because it felt like you were reading a book when that happens and they don't skip ahead to a certain part. It felt much more natural, I guess you would say.
See, now that's what I thought too. So I was a little disappointed with that, but I just felt like, okay, well, I guess they're thinking that Americans won't be drawn in.
They'll tune out.
Like, oh, we're not going to, this is boring.
They'll be so bored.
Yeah. I was just like, really? Oh, well. And what did you think of the actors in the Swedish film?
I love the girl. I forget what her name is now, but I really liked her. She was cool and she was really creepy. Like when she, one part I remember really well is when she got down on all fours and she was like literally licking blood off the floor.
Oh,
and you could see her tongue. It grossed me out. It was really creepy. And I was like, oh, I love this actress. She is crazy. Perfect for the part.
But were you not creeped out when that same thing kind of happened in the American version?
Not with Chloe as much.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it was
because like they made her
recognize Chloe Kick-Ass?
Yeah. Well, do you think, I feel like the vampire, this version, Chloe's version is a little more monstrous than the Swedish version. And so do you think that or not? Did you think that the Swedish version was scarier? Well, obviously it sounds like
they did make Chloe a little bit more monstrous, like when you think about her, how her voice changed, her whole face, her facial movements changed, everything about her kind of changes into this monster. But I guess I would find the Swedish girl a little bit creepier because she seems like such a sweet, innocent child, and then she, all of a sudden, she bites you in the neck like you don't expect it from her.
Totally.
It seems more like a realistic kid.
Interesting. Interesting. But that's, yeah. So thank you very much for watching the film, because it sounds like you really like that one more. And I'm glad.
I did,
because I wanted to know, like, okay, if you really enjoyed the American film, which it is a good, solid film, what would you think of the original film? And so some people, I think, would probably think it's slow and whatnot. But I'm glad to hear that you really liked it, even more so.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yay. So, Josh, now you're the only one left.
I know. I have to watch it. But now,
it's so good.
I will put that high on a to-do list.
Okay. So the other assignment that I failed to do, and you know what, though? Why am I failing on this? You didn't see Let Me In, Josh.
Well, yeah, but that was sort of a if you can. And Fright Night was definitely a we should all watch this and all talk about it. You know, I'm just saying.
All right. Okay. Well, speaking of Fright Night, I did not watch the film. So I'm curious, because Shannon and Josh have watched it, what they thought. We're doing our little film reviews at the top. And that's fine if you guys spoil anything for me. I don't really care. Okay. I'm the queen of spoilers anyways. You know, I always go to the back of the book, like, what happened? Okay, now I'm going to go read the rest since I know what happened.
Like cheating and looking on Wikipedia.
All the time. Everybody knows that who listens to this show. So I have no problem with you guys telling me important stuff. Right. I'm just really interested to hear your review and what you thought watching a film that was made in 1985?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. So I guess maybe someone give a little quick synopsis of the movie, if for those of us who don't really know the movie.
So there's this little boy. Well, I guess he's a teenager. He still lives at home. And he finds out that his next door neighbor, or he suspects that his next door neighbor is a vampire. But of course, he's a teenager, so he can't lead anyone to believe him, not the cops, not anybody, not even his friends believe him for a long time.
And he's also a horror film obsessed teenager. So
that
complicates his being able to convince other people that what he's seeing is real.
He watches this thing called Fright Night every night on TV with this main character, this old guy who is basically like the slayer of the show. And, I think eventually, I watched it like last week, so correct me if I'm wrong, but eventually this boy, what was his name, Charlie?
Yeah, Charlie.
He ends up going up to the guy and saying, hey, I think I have a vampire next door, please help us, we need you to slay him. So they all get together, they do the whole like 80s fight night thing. It was so terrible. It was so cheesy. I mean, eventually they kill the vampire. His girlfriend almost turns into a vampire, but she ends up getting changed back whenever her maker dies. It was
they had till dawn of her. She was, if they could kill the master before the first dawn of her being a vampire, she would be freed. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I've never heard of that happening, but okay. When in Rome. I didn't really like this movie.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Oh, God.
Why?
It's so cheesy. Okay, there's this one part that stands out in my mind that just made the whole thing terrible for me. At the very beginning, he's watching Fright Night on TV in his room at his parents' house. And on the TV, the slayer, the old guy, he starts attacking this blonde vampire on the television. But he's got the stake backwards, and it's facing him. And he starts running at the vampire.
Yeah, but that was on purpose. That was showing that the horror stuff on TV was I mean, all the whole movie itself is cheesy, but they definitely were portraying the stuff on TV as like ultra fake and cheesy. So I actually laughed at that because I knew that they were doing that on purpose.
It made me laugh. I had to rewind to make sure that I didn't just see things. I was like, what the heck was that? So I rewinded and made sure that the guy really was holding the stake backwards, which he was.
Yeah. Well, I took that stuff as kind of winks at the, you know, affectionate winks at the even older horror movies.
Oh, okay. 'Cause
at the time this had come out, vampires were not really, this was kind of the lulls in well, I don't know when Lost Boys came out, but I think that was later 80s, wasn't it? I'm not sure.
I'm not quite sure. I have to do an
IMDb. Yeah. But anyway, I mean, one of the themes of the movie is that you know, the Fright Night, the show itself, actually within the movie gets canceled during it because no one is watching it anymore and no one really is interested in vampires and horror movies anymore. They're interested in slasher flicks instead. There's this little mention of Friday the 13th kind of movies making it hard for Fright Night to get good ratings. But I mean, it's not a great movie by any means, but I actually liked that it was kind of doing this kind of affectionate nod towards the cheesy horror movies of old, and then they were trying to bring that into a kind of teen, you know, teen comedy, teen romance thing of the 80s, and then throwing in vampire stuff. And I did like Chris Sarandon as the vampire, because he plays this kind of dapper, this dapper, you know, seductive kind of, he seduces Charlie's girlfriend away from him. He glamours her.
He was like a suave young, he didn't have an English accent, but I would say he would be like a suave young Englishman who makes all the ladies swoon.
Yeah, exactly. It was definitely playing that, you know, Dracula as seducer side of the vampire, vampire myths and stuff like that. I think I liked the first half of the movie better than the second half, because the first half was more that kind of playful cheesy, and then the second half it seemed like they were like, oh, now we have to make a serious horror movie, so now we have to have, you know, long special effects scenes. That, what do you think of those? Because like those, well, we already know you don't like the movie overall, but the thing that struck me that I didn't remember from watching it as an actual teenager was the length of some of the special effects shots at the end. I felt like they almost felt like, oh, we paid this, you know, X amount of money to have this special effect, so we're going to shoot it for 3 minutes when it really could have been like 30 seconds.
Like, oh my God, it took way too long to kill the main vampire.
Yeah, yeah. And the transfer.
Where did that wolf come from?
I meant to look that up. I think that is part of traditional vampire lore, that some vampires, as well as being able to transform into a bat, can transform into a wolf, but I'm not sure. But it's funny, because I was, the bat aspect was definitely there from the beginning in this movie, and it made me think like, that's something that's definitely been completely dropped in the most recent, you know, our modern vampire stories, in all of them, True Blood, Twilight, Vampire Diaries, the vampire transforming into an animal has been dropped completely from those. So it was interesting to see that and be reminded, oh yeah, this used to be an absolute staple of vampires, that they would, you know, they would turn into a bat. And when this vampire...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and when this lead vampire dies at the end, the one thing I did like about that extended death sequence was that it seemed like he was trying to transform back. He gets caught in a ray of sunlight, and it seemed like he was trying to transform back into a bat to fly away. So his actual skeleton that you see at the end is kind of this huge half man, half bat thing that's writhing around. And
was cool.
Yeah.
I really like the skeleton. He was very creepy at the end when he died.
Yeah. Yeah. So that part was nifty. So, and I liked the guy, Rodney McDowell, is that his name? The guy who played the host of Fright Night, was the vampire slayer being introduced to the fact that vampires actually exist.
He played Peter Vincent.
Peter Vincent, yeah. I liked, he was just having a lot of fun in all the scenes he was in. He was obviously enjoying himself, so that part is entertaining. You know, I would give it like maybe three fangs as a movie if you can stand 80s cheese. Some of the soundtrack was too much of 80s for me, but...
Wait, like popular songs that we know?
No, there was like no-name 80s bands that were trying to sound like other popular 80s bands. So you were like, oh, this is kind of painful.
Got it. Well, what do you guys think about the remake that's happening with Colin Farrell in the lead role?
That sounds...
Actually, no. Well, the young kid will be this guy, Anton, who was Chekhov in Star Trek. But then I don't really know who Colin Farrell's going to play.
Farrell's playing the vampire, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
That's, okay. And that's appropriate because, yeah, he does have that kind of, you know, charming, you know, make the ladies swoon
kind of
appeal. So I'm pretty sure that's his role. And if it is, then that has potential to work well.
Hmm.
I will try to go into the remake very neutral. But
are you mad now that I made you watch this and now that there's going to be like maybe a better version of the film? Like,
I'm happy that I watched it because it reminded me of all the old school vampire movies like Lost Boys. Now Fright Night and like the really old Buffy episodes from the very first season. It reminded me
of the first season of Buffy. Oh. I'm sorry.
That was painful for Eileen.
Erase that from my head. Oh.
All the classic vampire things that come up, like not being able to be seen in a mirror. That was one of the ones that came up in the movie.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So well, I'll try to watch it neutrally.
Yeah. I thank the both of you for watching that and hopefully this week I'll have some time to watch it and let you guys know what I think. But
yeah, I'd be interested to hear your take on it as well. But definitely just be prepared for cheese. There is lots of cheese.
That's good to know. Yeah. Now I'm prepared. So, but then I'm going to expect that in the new film.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they try to make it more serious, if they try to de-cheesify it. Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to Twilight news. Now, Kristen Stewart was interviewed talking about her Breaking Dawn wedding dress. Did you have a chance to get a clip of that, Josh?
Yeah, we do have the audio for that.
Let's listen to what she had to say about the Bella wedding dress.
Coming up with Breaking Dawn, we're very much looking forward to the wedding scene. Have you had it fitting for your dress yet? Has that come across?
As of yet?
Yeah, kind of. But I haven't put the one on yet.
Is it difficult to decide between?
To be honest, it's such a big deal. Like, it's such a big decision that I have a little hand in having a decision or having an opinion more. But I think it's pretty much up to Stephanie and. I'm not quite sure exactly what it's going to look like. But it'll be beautiful, I'm sure.
Duh. No, I'm kidding. That's good to hear Kristen again. We're going to hear a lot of her and Rob and Taylor pretty soon. Of course it's up to Stephanie. She's just going to wear it, you know. But as we've seen with all of the films, everything has pretty much been true to form. If you've read something,
yes, that's pretty much.
So I think the description of the dress that we have read is probably going to be very, very close, if not exactly what we envision in the movie. But I'm sure also Kristen was probably trying not to give any details. She probably can't. I'm sure she's had the fitting. I'm sure she kind of knows. But, you know, she's not going to tell you. She's not going to tell you this early on. Not until, you know, the actual press junkets, you know, after the movie's made, you know, and they're out there promoting the film.
I can't wait till we get to see pictures.
I know. That's going to be amazing. And we've gotten some tweets over the last kind of couple weeks that we've been off. And thanks to Mr. Eric, Fat Emo Kid, who let us know that the trio, Kristen Stewart, Robert Pattinson, and Taylor Lautner, have indeed arrived to New Orleans and are probably in pre-production right now for Breaking Dawn. And there's pictures here, and there's an article. You just see them. And Rob still has a full-on beard, so he hasn't shaved any of that yet. But there's just pictures of the three of them showing up. They seem to be enamored by this dog that somebody owns on the set and whatnot. And they're all trying to, like, hey, guy, look at it. So that's great to know that they're out there in New Orleans and, you know, pre-production has begun. They're probably doing all their, you know, rehearsals and, you know, fittings and all that good stuff, for Breaking Dawn. And then, you know, I didn't put this in the rundown, but there is a, article here, another one from Eric. I will give him credit, who and I'll put this in for you, Shannon. The article is all about how sexy will you know, how the, kind of the details of the Breaking Dawn sex scenes. And, you know, do we know much about it yet or whatever? We've talked about the butt shot here on this show. How far are they going to go? And I guess there isn't obviously too much detail. And there's a lot of talk about the birth scene. But, you know, to get there, they have to have the sex scene. And we've all read it in the books. And there's a source here that says the sex scenes are dead on with the book. In fact, there is a little more sex in the movie and more sexual dialogue. The script is actually good, really good. In fact, the source adds, it isn't just Rob and Kristen who enjoy sexy times in the script. Most of the cast is getting in on the action this time. The script has a pretty sexual tone with a lot of characters this time around, not just Edward and Bella. And then it goes on to say, well, it is up to Bill Condon to determine how it will play out on the scene. I mean, this is just the early stages of the script, or almost final stages, actually, of the script. So, I don't know. We'll see. What do you think, Shannon?
I'm excited.
Are you excited for the sexy scenes?
Yeah, I kind of, yeah. You know, in the middle of that, I was thinking, let's see, they live in, what is it, Oregon, Washington? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Forks, Washington. And Edward is 17. When Bella turns, is Bella already 18 yet?
She will be, yeah, because that was the deal, right? She had to finish high school, and well, she turns 18. Okay. It's been so long since I've read the book. I think she turns. Yes, I think she's 18. I'm gonna get a lot of crap if I'm wrong.
Like, I was like, I wonder what the legal age is for, you know, 17 and 18 year olds to be legally able to have sex together in the state of Washington.
Well, it's interesting that you ask, because actually, you know, Mr. Edward is quite older than what than the 17.
Yeah, I bet he's actually breaking some age of consent law if you take into account his actual age.
That's funny.
I'm very excited. I think they're doing a lot of this, you know, bringing in more sexual dialogue and the sexual tone to the movie to, you know, get all the little girls and the teenage girls and even some of the boys totally obsessed with the movie. I'm sure there's tons of kids that are very excited about this.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree, but I think, you know, I think we're going to see a flurry of news coming out of New Orleans from here on out. So it's about time. It's been pretty dormant. And I know the DVD is coming out soon and whatnot, but, you know, we're supposed to see this film in, what, November of next year? So it's going to be, I don't know. It's about time, I guess, that we start, you know, hearing some news. Enough break time for those kids. You know, just shoot the film already.
To get their butts in gear.
One more piece of news in the Twilight universe. Breaking Dawn Renesmee audition tape. I actually haven't really watched this in full and just saw this as we were prepping for the show. But there is a YouTube clip of the actress that was cast as Renesmee. And you can watch it yourself. It's about 3 minutes long. And she goes through lines with someone who is playing Bella. You know, you see her acting it out. And I guess this is, I don't know how many auditions this girl had, but obviously, you know, they liked her enough to cast her. So, No. I'm sorry. This is a different girl. This is Tilly Sherry, the actual girl, Mackenzie Foy. We don't see here, but we do see dialogue, which is kind of interesting. And I think it's dialogue from the book, not necessarily from the script itself that will be used, but dialogue from the book. Did you take a look at this at all by any chance, Shannon?
No, I didn't get a chance to.
Yeah, sorry, I put this.
The kid looks cute from the screen capture.
It does look cute, but she didn't win the role, so kind of sad. I thought too when I looked at her, I'm like, that doesn't look like the girl that we saw. You all right there, Josh?
Yep.
It didn't look like the girl we saw in the photos that Stephanie found last week. So, all right. Just there's really no news for True Blood right now other than the Scream Awards and, you know, congratulations to, you know, the show for winning best show, TV show and whatnot. But I do have a little tidbit. There is a little movie that's coming out next year called Scream 4. I don't know if anybody out there is a Scream fan, but it's funny because I saw the trailer. If you watch the trailer, Anna Paquin, and I'd read already that she has a cameo. So I don't know what that means by cameo, if that means she's just going to die. She's in it. And we're going to go, oh, hey, that's, you know, if you know, that's the girl from True Blood. And then she dies. You know, I'm not quite sure. But she's sitting on a couch with Kristen Bell. And I mentioned before that I did the whole Veronica Mars marathon. So for me, it was really interesting to see this quick little scene. It's in the trailer, the two of them talking about being scared and sitting on a couch. And I feel like, wow, these two are probably going to die really early in the film. So there's got to be a lot of casualties in Scream. But I'm looking forward to Scream 4. I don't know. Do you guys, Shannon, are you not a fan of Scream?
Scream was like the very first VHS that I bought when in middle school. I loved that movie back in the day. I saw it in the movie theater like 4 times.
Oh my God. Now, have you seen all 3?
Yep. I've seen all 3.
Me too. Josh?
Back in the day. Oh yeah.
Are you a fan, Josh?
I really liked the first one and I remember sort of liking the second one and I didn't see the third.
Okay. Well, will you watch the fourth? Because it's the same. Sydney is back. And then so is Courtney Cox and David Arquette, who play the reporter and the cop. They're back. And then there's a whole new high school cast. Hayden Panettiere, who was on Heroes, is one of the high school cast. And then, of course, you know, as I mentioned, because Anna Paquin is going to have a cameo, will you watch because she's in it?
Sure. I probably will feel obliged to see number 3 before it, too. So
yeah. Well, it's all the same. I don't even think I remember 3. I did really like 1.
Yeah, 1 was pretty incredible.
But it's Wes Craven is back. So it's all the original, you know, it's sort of like, I guess it's a reboot, but, you know, new high school cast, obviously, and stuff. So, and of course, the Scream guy comes back because Sydney comes back in town. So he's like, oh, I'm going to terrorize you. Ho, ho, ho.
I am excited to see Anna and Kristen because I really enjoyed Veronica Mars after you mentioned it.
Oh, did you watch it? You ended up watching the show?
Yeah, I'm kind of sad that there's no more because I feel it's very open-ended.
I know, so, it kind of just ended and I feel empty. Like
bring it back.
Yeah, like they didn't get a chance to really end it. So I was like, that's it. That's it. She just walks off. Okay, great. Well,
I can't wait to see Anna playing something other than True Blood.
I know.
Recently.
But she might still have blood on her.
Yeah, that's true.
Might be a little different, though. All right. Well, and Vampire Diaries news. There's not much here either because we have a huge episode to recap. But there was the New York 2010 Comic-Con teaser. I think this would have been more impressive last week because there was no episode. And if you watch this teaser, we'll have a link to it on our website. A lot of like the first half of this teaser we already saw in the episode we're about to recap. And then the latter half of the teaser is showing us what I think scenes from the upcoming episode, the Masquerade episode. So I think it was more impressive to me when I first saw this, like, ooh, I've never seen these. And then I just watched it again just to kind of get a feel for, you know, trying to remember what was on this teaser. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we just saw all this. Mason and Catherine, Catherine calling Elena. I mean, like, oh, yeah, we saw all of this. So we'll just, you know, we'll leave a link. Somebody shot the teaser while they were at New York Comic Con. And you'll see. What we are talking about. But I think no further ado, let's go ahead and get into the recap for The Vampire Diaries Season 2, Episode 6, Plan B. Well, I thought it was I was very happy to have them back on the air. Yeah, and a lot happened here, and a lot happened that I didn't think would happen. I think let's kind of take a step back. Let's talk a little bit about Caroline and her mom. It seemed like, you know, wow, she was Caroline was very happy to start sharing information with her mom, and her mom was, you know, asking questions, you know, like, how do you feel? So you're not really dead, that kind of thing.
Yeah. What do you feed on? Heartbreaking.
Yeah. And I really felt for Caroline, because not only have we noticed that she's changed as a character, obviously her mom, in listening to her talk about, you know, her life now in the very short time that she has changed, has noticed changes in her as well. Is it appropriate to play this clip now?
Yeah. Let's listen to this clip between her and mom.
Okay.
So I pulled Stefan out of this well, and he's all verbaned and just rotted. But Bonnie wasn't mean to me once, and I really think it's progress, you know? I'm freaking you out.
It's just that you've become this person.
No, I don't. We're just starting to get along.
This strong, this confident person.
Oh. Thank you.
You don't have to take my memories away. I'll keep your secret. Look, if you're worried about them, just say you compelled me. I won't tell. I'll never do anything to hurt you.
And we never talk like this. Ever. And today meant so much to me.
Me too.
I know. I know I can trust you. But you're never going to trust them. I'm going to take you home. You're going to forget that I'm a vampire.
I'm going to forget that you're a vampire.
You'll remember you got sick with the flu. You had a fever, chills, and ickiness. But I made you soup. And it was really salty. We bickered. You got better. And then your selfish little daughter, who loves you no matter what, went right back to ignoring you. And all is right in the world.
Yeah. She went ahead and compelled her anyways. It was funny because, you know, she just kept saying earlier on, hey, the vervain is, you know, coming out of your body soon, so you can forget about all of this. And then, you know, as we noticed, I'm glad because I felt like her mom was going to support her either way. You know, I knew that she wasn't going to I did have this thing in the back of my mind, though, that, you know, as they were having this conversation, was she going to try and stake her, you know, in the middle of the conversation because she hates vampires so much? But obviously that wasn't the case. It was, you know, what I thought would originally be, which was the fact that, look, it's her daughter. She's going to support her daughter no matter what. And the initial shock of her becoming a vampire was going to fade away. But, you know, to protect the others, I think in a sense, Caroline did make the right choice in compelling her, even if it means that they're not going to be as close. And she's going to act as the spoiled brat that she was formerly. Sounds like, right?
It was so sad. I felt so bad for Caroline and her mom for having to go through that entire thing where they had this whole bittersweet moment where they were getting to know each other so well. And her mom was like, I'll support you in this so much. And then she just had to compel her anyway. I felt so bad for both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I see why Caroline did that. She had to, really, because she was right. It's because, okay, she's going to support her daughter, but she doesn't trust Stefan and Damon. Not one bit.
Yeah.
You know? And who's to say that she would ever, you know? Because Damon does a lot of stupid things. Right. Damon does a lot of stupid things. So, you know, he probably would have done something stupid to, you know, ungain her trust. So, yeah, I thought that was, you know, I thought it was good to see that at least Caroline knows that her mom would support her either way.
Yeah. And, you know? And maybe now that they had that whole moment where they had a conversation and they were able to grow their relationship with each other, maybe now Caroline will be closer to her mom, even though her mom doesn't really know her true secret.
I hope so. Yeah. Maybe she can be a little bit different, but yet, you know, not give off any hints. Yeah.
Not
maybe.
So selfish, but
because she doesn't have to be. She can change, you know, and
yeah, she can.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I just wanted to get that, you know, out of the way and our development and our our Caroline appreciation continues, I think, to this date. But I had to remind myself how this episode started. And basically it was with Stefan and Elena in the morning. And then now I remember it cuts back to Catherine and Mason in the morning as well, which was kind of a really odd kind of cut scene for scene for scene, you know? Because you see Elena and then you see Catherine a little bit more adult, I guess, with Mason. And it was kind of a little confusing for me, but, you know, because I was kind of thinking maybe I just didn't believe it as much this time, because normally I'm like, oh, Nina Dobrev pulls it off all the time. But I almost didn't believe it. But maybe because I was so into watching the Stefan and Elena and then trying to change back to Mason and Catherine. And maybe because the Mason and Catherine relationship was just introduced. So I was like, what? I don't really understand it yet. So, so that was a little odd.
I could believe it, but I just spent that entire scene just trying to figure out which each of the conversations was going on.
Right. I know.
I was a little confused.
I liked it. I liked their attempt to do it. But I got a little confused and I was trying to, you know, follow one to the other. And, you know, maybe I need to watch it again. I don't know. I think it was just all happening. You know, when you watch it for the first time, you see it. Normally I watch these episodes twice and I haven't had a chance to watch it again. But so maybe if I watch it again, I'll have a different appreciation for it.
I liked it. I thought it was clever how they were cutting back and forth. It was really confusing for me the first cut they did from Stefan and Elena to Catherine. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then after that, I like picked up the rhythm. But they did make it tricky because they even had little bits of dialogue that were very similar between both parties.
Yes. Because they were answering.
Yeah, they did.
In a different way, you know, like Catherine would say something and Stefan would answer, or Stefan would say something and Catherine would answer.
Right, exactly.
You know, and so that's why I got a little confused there. Maybe me so slow. I don't know. But, all right. Now, as we move on, and we later find out too that Jenna heard it all going down in Elena's bedroom.
Yes, she did.
As she confronted Stefan. And so remind me again, what was going on at the Lockwoods? The Lockwoods are always having a party. So
Setting up for like a masquerade, I think.
Oh, right. Okay. For which is going to happen this week. Okay.
Yes.
God, they're always having a big party. Like, geez, really? They have that much money that they have all these parties every week?
Kidding. Yeah, and the father still, that wasn't very long ago that he died, and they're like, party, party!
I know. Okay, well, Alaric.
That's terrible.
I know, isn't it sad? I guess life goes on. let's see here. Oh, Jeremy ended up telling Damon that he knows about the Moonstone, and they started kind of talking back and forth about what it is. And Damon was like, where can you get it? Well, yeah, Tyler has it, you know, just to talk about it.
Now, did that whole thing struck me as a little bit weird, because I still didn't remember how Jeremy had resolved Damon snapping his neck. Like, I
well, it was just that one episode. Remember when he showed up and he said that he had put the vervain and the whiskey and whatever, and then they just kind of talked it out. Do you remember that episode? They talked it out.
I remember that happening. I just don't remember. I don't remember the meat of it. I don't remember how they like smoothed over the fact that Damon tried to kill him.
Yeah. That was
it didn't strike me weird that Jeremy would be interacting with Damon, but the fact that he was so eager to, you know, I have this neat information for you and I want to hang out with you and solve this mystery with you. I was like, okay, this guy just snapped your neck a couple of days ago. So
I think Jeremy has a bit of a fascination with the unreal type of things. Like,
That's definitely true. That's definitely true. But why wouldn't he maybe go to Stefan instead? You know, because
yeah, that's true.
Stefan didn't try to kill him.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that struck me as a little bit off there, but
interesting. Yeah, no, that's true. I was going to say, because I think maybe he is fearless because he's got the ring and he knows what he has and he's learning a little bit more. And yeah, I don't know, maybe he's got a little bit of an agenda, you know, on his own.
It's possible.
Maybe he's trying to gain his trust only to stick him later as the Gilbert that he is, you know?
That would be really interesting if that was true.
He obviously he knows that his sister loves Stefan, so he's like, okay, well, we'll just leave Stefan alone because, you know, I know he's a good guy. But Damon, maybe if I try and get under his skin and we, you know, partner together, I can ultimately turn on him.
I like this theory that you just made up.
I don't know. I just kind of made that up. But I don't know that Jeremy is emotionally strong enough to do that. But maybe he's just learning, you know.
He is becoming a little bit stronger overall, because there was also that moment when Elena tried to tell him, you shouldn't be involved in this. And he was like, you don't get to tell me what to do, because you involved me in this already.
Yeah, it's your fault I'm in this. Okay, sister?
Right. So. I could buy that as a possible theory.
I'm just, you know, you never know what's going on with the Gilberts, okay? Because he's got the Gilbert blood who hated the vampires. At the same time, he did fall for two, you know, one of which wasn't a vampire. True. One turned into a vampire he didn't know. And then the other one was a vampire, Anna. So he has sort of this sympathetic view of them as well. And then knowing that at least... And Stefan is showing that he, you know, they can be good, you know. So I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell, because I think he is sympathetic to the vampires. At the same time, you know, Damon was really mean. But maybe, again, it's just all about Damon. He's not out for revenge against the vampires. He's really out for Damon. Because you're right. Because I don't think that's really been...
Addressed.
Yeah. Okay, so Alaric comes in and talks about Isabel's research about Aztec legends and reveals that moonstones can break the wolf curse. Okay. So now we know why the moonstone, you know, is important. But does Mason really know why the moonstone is important? You know? All right, so...
Still curious, we don't know why Catherine is interested in it and why she, as she says later, I need a werewolf. We'll get to that later. But what exactly is she?
Maybe she's trying to wipe him out. I don't know. We talked about this last week, but she has some sort of deal, it seems like, going back to the Lockwoods, George Lockwood, way back in the day. Mm-hmm. So,
but if she's trying to wipe them out, then they just did her a favor by killing Mason. So she wouldn't need to create a new one, as it seems she wants to do at the very end of this episode. So,
well, maybe she's going to be like, not Franklin Mott. Who am I thinking of? The King of Mississippi.
To rule over.
Yeah. To have,
that's possible. Well, yeah.
And to have like her clan of werewolves.
Maybe there's some pact she has with that werewolf lineage, but she wants to change the terms of it, and maybe the moonstone would help her do that. Maybe that's part of it.
Okay, so what do you guys think of Bonnie helping out the Salvatore brothers and to get Mason kidnapped from the Lockwood party?
I was very happy to see Bonnie come back and be a part of the main cast again.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been gone for a while, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was. It was very nice to see her helping out. I felt like she might have been growing a little bit softer towards the vampire since she had that moment with Caroline herself.
Well, it was good that she and Elena had that talk, because she was like, you know, I'm sorry, but Carolyn's a vampire. At the same time, you know, you haven't told me anything that's going on, and it's weird that I don't know.
That was so much like going into high school and having two best friends and having one of them hold a secret with you and the other one feels like she's left out. Like, I'm sure that so many kids can like understand what Bonnie's going through, and it was very lifelike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I didn't even know that you and Stefan were pretending to fight. You know, why am I finding out this now? You know, so I thought that was cool. It was a little touchy there when Stefan had to leave Damon and Bonnie to talk, and Damon was, you know, his short fuse was getting on her.
That was funny.
Because you're going to do what I say. Yeah. Come on. Play nice, everybody. In the end, she does help them out and, you know, gets Mason into the Salvatore mansion and ties him up. Now, this is where I get a little sad, because, okay, I, you know, I don't really have too many strong feelings about Mason Lockwood, but I was, you know, I guess we'll just jump to it. I'm really sad to see him go. Am I the only one sad to see him go? Really, Josh? You don't care?
He was kind of a jerk. But overall, I really liked the character. He was just on the wrong side.
Too, he's supposed to help Tyler, you know, in discovery of what he is, you know, and warned him, like, don't, you know, kill anybody.
Yeah, but Tyler had to force that information out of him every bit of the way. Like, it was not part of Mason's agenda or even inclination to really be a mentor to Tyler. He was just, he kind of, like, was just forced into doing that to a certain extent. And I don't even know if he would have been a good mentor, given that he's mixed up with Catherine. So, you know, right. I am glad that Tyler knows the additional information that he knows now, but I don't know if Mason really would have been that beneficial for him in the long run. So
You just didn't think he was hot like we did, right?
that's probably another factor.
That's why we wanted him in there, because he's hot.
Okay, well, I don't know. I mean, when Damon was torturing him and trying to find out what was up, you know, and then he finds out that, oh, you know, because Catherine loves me. And then, you know, Damon just started laughing maniacally. I mean, I did feel bad for Mason at that point.
I did feel bad for him there. Yeah,
you know, it's
true.
Sort of like, okay, look, you were tricked by Catherine. But she probably doesn't love you. In a way, I feel like she really does love Stefan, but maybe only because he hasn't responded to her. But still, she has this maybe false thought of what love is, you know? And in the end, I think she did play him, and I just felt bad for him at this point. Like, he got caught in the middle. He didn't even, like, does he know? He didn't know what the moonstone was for. He just got it for her. Right? I can't remember.
I don't think he ever actually comes out and says, this is what the moonstone does.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're...
He was just there trying to get it to Catherine the whole time.
Yeah, I think you guys are right. Yeah, I don't think he knew.
Well,
I did get kind of stuck in the middle of it. Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's why I feel bad.
See, surfers shouldn't get involved with vampires.
I guess not. And then, you know, Tyler, I can't remember. Damon left that false message on Tyler's mom's phone saying, I've left, I fled.
Yeah.
When he really, you know, is gone forever. It was sad. Really sad, I thought.
I think she was hoping that he would stick around and be like Tyler's fatherly figure.
Exactly. But in the end, she kind of wasn't surprised, you know? And then Jeremy was watching this whole thing happen. And then, you know, Damon was pretty much threatening him. Like, look, either you stay or you go. You know, you have to deal with it. You're going to be a man about it and watch this happen or go.
Right, but
I'm going
to don't tell me not to kill him. Yeah.
And literally rips Mason's heart out. Ouch. That was pretty, that was pretty sad.
That's gotta hurt.
That was grotesque.
Yeah, I mean, he's a vampire. He's, you know, predator by nature, right? But yeah, I didn't quite expect. I just thought he would like snap his neck or.
Yeah, that
I don't
was
know.
Pretty. I definitely did go whoa there. I did. Yeah, that particular choice of death was surprising to me. So
yeah,
but
yeah.
It fits in with Damon's. You know, when he's pissed and cruel, he'll think of something creative.
Yeah, actually, no. Mason did know because he said that he's going to lift the curse.
Oh,
right.
Oh, I did.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that part now. Yeah, yeah. He did. He did. He did know about the Moonstone and that, you know, Catherine was going to help him. But do we really believe Catherine was really going to help him? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
And then Damon has to call Catherine and gloat.
Yes, totally gloat about that, which tips her off to everything.
And she reveals the title of the episode.
Plan B. Yeah. But let's go back to the Moonstone, because apparently when Bonnie touched Mason while he was still alive, he saw something. You know, he saw Catherine. She saw Catherine. Yeah. She thought it was Elena, but, you know, Stefan was like, no, you saw Catherine. And then she pretty much she touched him again when they captured him. And then she said she saw a well. Is that the?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. She saw a well and she immediately knew what it was, but she wasn't going to tell Damon. So she leaves the house. She calls, she gets Caroline to go with her. And that was good because their friendship was kind of patched.
Well, Caroline convinces her to let her go with her. But yeah.
But, you know, she's like, okay, you can come with me.
Yeah.
And then she calls Elena to tell her about the Moonstone, and then of course Stefan is there as well. And then Stefan and Elena reach the well before, and so he decides to go down without really thinking, well, that might be dangerous down there. And as soon as he goes down the well, there was the vervain in the water, and he's starting to like burn, and it's bad, like immediately. And he didn't have enough power or strength to jump up and get out of the well. Because I was expecting him to kind of like fly up, but obviously if the vervain was, you know, all in the, it was completely doused into the well.
Came as a surprise.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of thought, okay, how is he going to hide the Moonstone so that it doesn't hurt you, so that a vampire can't get it? And he didn't really, and to Mason's credit, didn't tell Catherine really where it was.
Yeah.
And even if she did find out, there was a ton of vervain in that well.
Yeah.
Although she's been taking vervain for so long, it doesn't really hurt.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
But in a well that
big?
Yeah,
it'd probably be too much. Even
so much, though, remember, she'd probably still have a problem getting her.
Yeah, yeah, and it still singed her, remember, when Stefan like held it against her face.
Right, so, the dry version. Yeah. So I'm assuming a lot of amounts of vervain like that would have hurt her just as bad.
Yeah.
So Stefan's in there and starting to burn up, and Elena's like, oh my God. And then Caroline comes, thank God, and gets the rope and, you know, brings her down. And so they're able to pull Stefan up so he's not too hurt. And then Elena, you know, the brave girl that she is, decides, well, I'm going to look for the Moonstone. And then she ends up finding it. But then there's snakes and whatnot. But in the end, she gets out. She gets the Moonstone. Yay. And then we find out, you know, that Catherine calls Elena and pretty much threatens her. Now we get, am I missing a scene here? Am I missing something?
No, I think that's right after.
Yeah. So let's hear that conversation between Catherine and Elena.
Hello, Elena. Did you enjoy your little rendezvous with Stefan this morning? I will always know, Elena. I will always be one step ahead of you. When are you gonna figure that out? Do you know how easy it was to get inside of your house? To replace Aunt Jenna's vervain perfume, to convince her to stop drinking your special tea? No, Jenna's been my little spy for days now. But unlike you,
Jenna actually listens to me.
So, when I suggest that the world would be a much better place if she were to just...
Jenna, no!
Jenna! Oh, Jenna.
Well, you get the idea.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of thought, okay, somebody calls and Jenna's kind of spacey. What's going on? But that I thought that was really interesting that all this time she was getting the information from Jenna. And
yeah,
nobody knew.
She was her little spy. I was like, holy crap, really?
Yeah, well, you know, she got into the house. She was invited in. So now it's just a matter of playing the Elena part,
right?
You know? Behind the scenes, whenever Elena was gone with Stefan, you know, she's gone a lot, you know. So I was pretty shocked, though, that the knife went in, that, you know, she told her to go ahead and stab herself,
right,
which is pretty shocking. The whole time I'm looking at, you know, Alaric is looking at her, and from the, you know, from the, in the background, you kind of see Jenna back there. I'm like, what is happening? What is happening? And then
I did feel some apprehension when they showed like the close up of her cutting the loaf of bread with the knife. I was like, okay, that when things like that happen on the show, it usually means something bad is going to happen.
Right. Exactly. But that was, you know, pretty awful.
It was surprising.
Yeah.
It was. And so Jenna ends up in the hospital and she's just, Elena's completely, you know, dumbfounded. And Jeremy's like, no, she's going to pay. She's going to pay. And the whole time I'm thinking, I'm like, Jeremy, how are you going to know that that's not your sister? You know, how are you going to know?
The perm.
Yeah, maybe. But everybody gets fooled.
Everybody's got fooled. I was just kidding.
But there's got
to
be
it is so easy to curl your hair these days.
Exactly. So I don't know. I just feel like he might get fooled in the end. And then Elena just, you know, pretty much decides, I don't know, something pretty huge. And we should probably hear that conversation she has with Stefan.
I'm so sorry.
We were stupid. Sneaking around thinking that we weren't going to get caught. We did this. Stefan, Jenna's in the hospital, and Jeremy could be next. All because we didn't listen to her. Because we're together. Stefan.
I know what you're gonna say to me.
Then let me say it. I've been so selfish because I love you so much. And I know how much you love me. But it's over. Stefan, it has to be. No, Stefan.
I wasn't thinking. I didn't think.
It doesn't matter, Damon. She won. Catherine won.
I was completely sad at this point. What were you guys thinking?
Yeah.
I mean, she really, I respect her decision, but that was still really sad that that had to happen.
Yeah, it was very sad. I as well, I respect Elena's decision to break up. I think it was the right choice to make so she doesn't end up killing off her whole family accidentally because of what Catherine's doing. But at the same time, I was thinking, well, you guys can just kill off Catherine one of these days and get back together. It'll all be good. Quit crying.
Well, hopefully that will be their plan B.
Let's hope so.
Wow. Well, I just, you know, I see the remorse Damon has, and the whole time I'm thinking, okay, so are you two going to get together now? Elena. Because Catherine doesn't really care, you know, so right now doesn't really care about Damon. So I don't know. I mean, that is the real breakup. They're not fighting anymore. And I totally felt for the both of them when all of this was happening. So. Mm-hmm. How long are they going to stay broken up? What do you guys think?
Probably like an episode. God.
Come on, people.
Two or three episodes, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. There's a big masquerade that's supposed to happen next week. And, you know, the goal is to kill Kat, but I don't know if that's really going to happen. I don't know that they're going to be able to get rid of her that fast. I mean, it's not even the halfway through the show.
I was going to say, way too early in the season.
Yes, way too early.
So they're going to attempt, and there's going to be probably some, I don't know, some issues.
I wonder, I don't want to send Eileen on a huge spoiler-revealing quest, but I just started to wonder how long Catherine lasts in the books.
Oh, true.
But I think we've heard from people that they've deviated so extremely from the books already that that might not be any real indication.
Mm. True, true, true.
Because I was even thinking, I wouldn't mind seeing Catherine around for multiple seasons. You know, I mean, it's going to be hard for them to come up with as good a villain after. Whenever Catherine's gone, if she is ever totally gone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a doppelganger of your main character is pretty hard to top.
That's true.
Okay. There's a couple of responses on Twitter I want to read from Super_Lulu1. I find it funny that in the Vampire Diaries books, Matt is one of the few to know about the vamps, but in the TV show, he is clueless.
Oh, we forgot to mention that last scene with Matt.
Yes. Matt is being manipulated by Catherine in that very last scene.
Yes.
And that he's supposed to lure Tyler because she needs another vampire. Another werewolf. And so, you know.
She wants him
don't
to
stop
fight
until he dies.
Tyler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Until Tyler kills him. Yeah.
Also, Super_Lulu1 says, if Elena had a little sister like in the TVD books, Kat would have a field day. So I don't, you know, Lulu, I have not read the books, so I don't really know. But that's interesting. So a little sister and not a brother, I guess. Sorry, we haven't been keeping up with the
books.
With the books. Yeah. Let's see. There was another email here. Let's see here. From Angela, who says, missed you guys last week. The show was good on Thursday, and I was glad to see that every cast member, I think anyways, was in the episode. I was not happy to see Mason die. See, not just me and Shannon. I'm still not sold that he died. Really? One can only hope. Mm. I was also not happy that Matt has been compelled to attack Tyler in order to trigger the curse. Had a feeling that Catherine had compelled the guy that Mason had killed in order to set his curse off.
Yeah.
By seeing her do it to Matt, I am pretty sure that is what happened. My theory about Jeremy getting killed in order for Tyler to become a werewolf still stands. And now I think that Jeremy is going to get in between Tyler and Matt. They can't kill off Matt, but it is a vampire show. Anyhow, keep up the good work. Later. And then we got a few more. Let's see here. This is from... Hold on. This is from Elise. I wanted to ask you all what you thought about the end of the TBD episode Plan B. I honestly don't think I've ever been more shocked in my life. When Elena walked up to Stefan crying, I just expected her to fall into his arms or something. Then she said, it's over. And I admit I almost lost it. Do you guys think that this is for good or maybe for the best? I think they'll get back together eventually, but I can't decide if it's going to help the whole Catherine situation. Thanks, and keep bringing us vampires, all the fantastic episodes. Thank you, Elise. What do you guys think? Is this for the good? For the best.
I think it's for the best, but who knows? Maybe Catherine just has a huge jealousy complex, and she'll just keep on going after Elena because she looks like her or something.
Yeah, and it's also there's also the argument that she wants to divide and conquer. You know, that she wants to split everyone up so they won't be able to gang up. I mean, your point about why don't they get together and just kill Catherine is, I mean. There is something to that. If they all were concertedly working together to fight her, maybe they'd have a chance. But Catherine's definitely calling all the shots right now.
She really is. And I think she's got, you know, it's sort of like chess. You know, one person jockeys ahead, then another person jockeys ahead. And then, you know, it's kind of like, boom, somebody's, you know. Your checkmate. Now, there's no checkmate yet, but, you know, it's sort of like, okay, your turn, your turn, your turn. So, I don't know. I think eventually they'll get back together. before, you know, she becomes Delana with Damon. I feel like that's inevitable. Going to try and not think about that, but I think it's inevitable. So, I don't know. I you know, at the same time, you can't have a happy couple the entire time because that's really boring, right? Yeah. So, I don't know. What do you guys think that's going to happen over the next... Shannon, you're going to be gone for the next couple of weeks. You're going on a lovely Italian vacation. So we're going to miss you for the next couple of weeks. But what do you think is going to happen?
Oh, God. I think Elena's going to get with Damon. They're going to hit it off for a little while, but Elena will probably... notice why she didn't like him in the first place and ended up picking up with him again. She'll be single for a while. Stefan will probably have to come in contact with Catherine again and have some kind of confrontation with her. Maybe they'll try to attack her. Hopefully in the next episode. I don't know. I can't believe I'm going to have to wait until the middle of November to find out. I'm going to have to find like a little cafe in the middle of Rome and watch... Download
everything and download so you're caught up. You don't have to do that, but I would appreciate it if you were caught up. That's awesome. That's awesome. I don't know what to think. Josh, what do you think?
I kind of fall in the same predictions Shannon gave. I think in the interim, Elena might be turning to Damon for at least help, if not actual romance. But I think we're going to see her and Stefan get back together pretty quickly, because I think it's going to be necessary for them to work together and to be together for them to actually be able to fend off Catherine. But
yeah,
they'll have to fight as a team.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Oh, we'll see. We'll see. Next week, I think I'm going to be talking with Stephanie, maybe. Or maybe it's just you and me, Josh. I don't know.
We'll have to see.
We'll have to see because, as we mentioned, Shannon's going to be on her Italian vacation. And just related to that, we got an email from Jennifer Hoff, who sent us this link that True Blood star Joe Manganiello is engaged. The 33-year-old small screen heartthrob asked girlfriend Audra Marie to marry him while recently on a vacation in Italy. A rep for the actor confirmed to Access Hollywood. People was the first to report the couple's engagement. Let's see here. The couple reportedly met in 2009 at a Super Bowl party, but Joe was chasing vampires in his hit HBO show as werewolf Alcide Hevereau. She wouldn't go out with me for 6 months, Joe told the mag in September. We started dating a few months before I got cast in True Blood. Audra also gushed to the mag about the actor at the time, saying she loves his sense of humor, his work ethic, and how humble he is with everything that has gone on. The couple has reportedly not set a date for the wedding. Hearts are breaking all around the world. So I thought that was appropriate because, you know, we talked about you and your Italian vacation.
I don't think I'll be coming back with a...
Really?
I'll probably come back with some good wine.
Okay, good. Oh, jot down all the wine that you drink while you're out there.
Oh, I definitely will. Oh, yeah.
That's so exciting. Okay. Well, thank you once again to everybody who has commented. And, oh, you know what? I didn't even get to our blog. Oh, my God. We had, like, a few comments on there. Let's see here. I know one of them was mine. And maybe one of them was spam. Yeah, one of them was spam. Okay, M says, Tyler and Jeremy need to confess their love for each other already. There is some serious bromance tension here. Nice. Stephanie Meyer's book, The Host, is being made into a movie said to be coming out next year. Will you guys be reviewing it, even though it's not about vampires and werewolves? I think we should because it's Stephanie Meyer. Yay. So, yeah, it's aliens, but it's Stephanie Meyer, so we should.
That reminds me of Animorphs from when I was really young. So I'm so excited.
Okay, cool. And then this is from Marcy, who says, let's see here. She wrote a nice long post for us. Hi, guys. I love your show as always. I end up talking out loud to my computer. As I listen, I find myself saying, yes, that's what I thought. And no, that's not right. That's good, because if we're eliciting any kind of emotional response, then we're doing our job. Because we don't claim that we are the experts. We are just commenting on what we like. And we are very glad that all of you have decided to tune in. Like some of you, I can't wait till Elena and Damon's relationship gets going. That would be Lynn. But I do also want to see the blood sharing with Stefan play out for a while. First, an hour a week is just not enough. I was also shocked by the Elena Mason twist at the end. You mean Catherine Mason twist at the end. I agree that Josh, that Elena used her compulsion. Oh, you mean Catherine. See, you're getting messed up too, Marcy.
It's that first scene mixed up.
Yeah, Catherine used her compulsion on Mason's friend to trigger his curse. I don't think Mason has a clue what the Moonstone is for. I was also thinking that Tyler might kill. This is from our last show too that she commented. I was also thinking that Tyler might kill Jeremy at some time to trigger his curse without actually killing anyone. Love Caroline as the vamp. I figure that Matt will eventually feed Caroline like he did in the books. Oh, like he did. I'm sorry. Like he did Elena in the books. I think that Catherine was perhaps running, hiding from Klaus when she set up the 1984 church burning. Maybe 1884 church burning. Wouldn't be surprised if they bring him into the story in season 3. There'd better be a season 3. I want Damon to compel Liz to remember something, but keep their secret. But I don't think that will happen. I wonder if the guys will kill Mason next episode. Marcy, there you go. You were right. He'll only tell Liz again if he finds that they wiped her memory. He's got to go, but I kind of want him to stay for a while. Well, yeah, we don't get that. So there's so much else to think and speculate. I've hooked one of my neighbors on the show, bought her the season 1 DVD. It's very nice, and she's passing on the addiction to her extended family. Gotta get everyone and watch it. Great show. Keep it the good work. Hope Lynn's having fun in her travels. Thank you, Marcy. Appreciate it. And again, she posted that after the last episode 2 weeks ago, not the episode that we just saw this week. So many good predictions, I guess. Okay. Well, I guess this wraps it up. And Shannon, have a great trip while you're gone.
Thank you.
We'll be excited to have you back when you're back. But we can't wait to hear your Italian stories and, take pictures. Yeah. Take pictures. If you run into any Twilight, Vampire Diaries, or True Blood paraphernalia while you're out there written in Italian, take pictures.
Oh, yes.
Awesome.
Definitely snap.
That kind of thing. But, I guess until next week, everybody, thank you all for listening. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.